Okay, so I was on this trip. The last 2 weeks I was in Toronto, I was in Montreal, and on Sunday and Monday I was in Minnesota. So my wife wants to know why I keep getting places to talk that are very, very cold. So if anyone's watching this and they're interested in inviting Rabbi Wallerstein to Florida, I'm there. So there's two things I like to talk about. First, I like to talk about Minnesota. So I went to Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was invited to speak in Beis Yaakov of Minneapolis. And they also had a dinner Sunday night and then speak to girls Monday morning. So I get into the car when I get off the plane, and somebody from Minneapolis picks me up, and I get in the car, and I'm like, so tell me, the girls I'm going to be speaking to, I don't know Minneapolis, the girls and the dinner I'm going to speak to, Beis Yaakov, Minneapolis, like, what type are they? Like, it's out of town. I don't really know out of town. Like, tell me about the other schools so I understand the breakdown. You know, the co-ed school and the modern girl school and the Beis Yaakov school, and do you have any Hasidic schools? So I have an idea of what's going on. And he looks at me, and he says, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know, the co-ed school, the modern school. He says, we have one school. I'm like, you have one school? Yes, he says, we have one school. I'm like, so the modern kids and like the new Bali Tshuva and the like from kids, from parents who are, like everyone, the Litvisha, everyone's in the same school? He says, yeah. I'm like, there's nowhere else for me to talk? Like, there's no, this is the only school in town and it's a Beis Yaakov? And he's like, yeah. And I have to say that I met the whole Beis Yaakov Monday morning, and it's amazing that there could be a school in a city like Minneapolis, and there's only one girls' school. And they're able to teach all these different girls from all these different backgrounds, and everyone gets along, and everybody loves each other. And I said that I would speak about that tonight, because I'm just so excited what I saw, that that you can actually put a lot of different people in one school, teach them 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and they all get along. So it's not just a compliment to the school to have teachers that are able to do that. It's a huge compliment, and I'm complimenting them because they watch my share all the time, that it's a huge compliment to the parents. Like, my kid should go to school with that girl? Her parents don't do this, and her mother looks like that? And none of that. None of that. So it's an unbelievable compliment, and I'm complimenting them, that to the parents of the children, that they understand that Klal Yisrael is Am Echad, and you can really teach Torah to everybody at one time. And it's under the name Beis Yaakov. And they're not choosing this one or that one. Every single girl that goes to Jewish high school goes to that school. So, Hodel Hashem Ki Tov, they get a very big compliment that they're able to do that. I want to talk about Montreal for a minute. So everybody thinks when I go somewhere, they get very, very scared that, you know, I'm going to come back and talk about them. So if there's not something good to talk about, then I don't talk about them. But if there's something good to talk about, I need to talk about it. So I want to tell you, I was in a Shabbaton for a school in Montreal. It was just this school alone. And I was there for Shabbos with all of them. They were absolutely, absolutely amazing. And of course, me being there for Shabbos, just interesting. So last year, whoever was by the Shabbaton, we're still trying to work on a Shabbaton to get one done. We can't find the hotel. We're going through a big struggle, but we'll find something sooner or later. So I come to Montreal, and on Friday afternoon, they hand me the how many times I have to speak. First of all, I said, so what other rabbis did you bring in for the Shabbaton? They're like, no one. Just you. I'm like, okay. And then they give me, you know, the whole list on a piece of paper, the schedule. And it says, speak by dinner, by Friday night dinner, speak after dinner, then speak to the 10th graders, and that ends at 11. And then from 11 to 1, speak to individual students. So my wife, who was with me, walks over to the principal and says, I never heard of a rabbi and a Shabbaton, right, that comes to a Shabbaton that is asked on a Friday night to stay up till 1 o'clock. So she says, what do you mean? All the girls came back from the Aranava Shabbaton and said that the rabbis were speaking to the girls till 8 o'clock in the morning. We gave you off 7 hours. So it was very amazing. And the school is called Yavne in Montreal. Very holy children, very holy people, very holy girls. It was a very, very beautiful Shabbos. And, of course, I spoke about Facebook. And I spoke about media and Facebook. And they took it very, very seriously. I told them the story that I had repeated here to that poor girl that I went to the hospital. And you all know the story. And I got a phone call today and from one of the girls and said, "Rabbi Wallerstein, you don't understand. Most of the girls that are in the school Sunday went off Facebook." So whether it's going to last or not, that's up to them. But Lamai said they reacted, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight. They reacted, and they didn't just hear it, but they deheard it. It went inside, and they did something about it. So there's a story. There's a story that's brought down in the Kavah Yashar, which I have spoken about many, many times, about the keys. And I think that I would like to repeat this story, and I will connect it to my whole... Tonight is really the... I'm giving a brand new shiur that I never gave before on Bitachon. Because one of the things that was built into the Jewish nation in these parshas of Shemos and Ve'era and Bo, and then Kriyas Yamsuf, which was the ultimate emunah bitachon, was to take this nation, us, and plant in us the genetics to believe, to have bitachon. So Moshe Rabbeinu came, said things are going to get better, things got worse. So they were like, no bitachon, right? Then Moshe Rabbeinu came, and he said, "I'm going to do dam." Right? So everybody's like, yeah! Right? And then what happened? The Chatumim went ahead and they copied it. Ah, oh, forget it. Right? And they did Tzvadeya. Everybody said, ah, now we believe. And the Chatumim, the wizards of Egypt, copied it. And they went, huh. Then came Kinim, right, which was the lice. They couldn't copy it because it was smaller than a bean. And they used the dark side. And the dark side can't control something that's smaller than a bean. So you have Etz Elokim. And you see, through all the makos, there's an ebb. There's a belief, wow, and then there's like an ebb between the wow, and then it goes away, and then it comes back, and then it goes away. And that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu was building us up, slowly but surely. Emunah, a little emunah, then it went away. Then more, a little emunah, then it went away. And then we went out of Mitzrayim, and even when we came to Kriyas Yamsuf, right, after all this, up and down, emunah, bitachon, we come to Kriyas Yamsuf, and Klai Yisrael screaming, the Mitzrayim are behind us, the water's in front of us, we're going to die. What happened to the God that did all this stuff? So Moshe Rabbeinu cries to Hashem, and he starts davening, and this is the basis of what I'm going to talk about tonight, and he starts davening, and the first time ever you'll see in the Torah, Hashem says, stop davening. Now, what does a Jew do when you're in trouble? You daven. So what do you mean, stop davening? I'm in trouble. I got Egyptians behind me. I got an ocean in front of me. Help! Hashem says, no, don't scream for help. Do something. Do something. There comes a time in life where even tefillah is not enough. You have to take a step, which I'm going to be speaking about tonight, a shiur from Shimshon Pinkus. And it's a new shiur, and it's just mind-boggling. I'm sorry that I only heard it once, and I'm trying to give it over to you. I should have heard it 101 times. So there's this story, a very... interesting story brought down the Kavah Yashar in Perichov Hay, and actually there's a lot of things that are brought down because of this story. And the story says as follows, and I'm going to take it to a little different point than I usually take it. So there was this miser, and he didn't even show up in shul on Monday and Thursday because he didn't want to give tzedakah. He didn't want to give tzedakah to anybody. So there was one interesting thing about him. That even though he didn't want to give tzedakah, and he never gave a penny to anyone that was poor, he was a mohel. He did circumcisions. And that he would do for free. He was a multi-millionaire. He didn't need money. So he couldn't give money. He couldn't give money. But he could do a bris milah and not charge. One day, a guy shows up at his house, tall, very good-looking man, and he says, I had a baby boy, and I want you to come. I heard that you do milah for free. I'd love you to come and do the bris milah. He says, no problem. packs up his brisket. You're all sleeping. Okay, anyway, so he gets all his stuff that he needs for the bris, and he packs up his clothing, and, okay, some people will laugh by Tuesday next week. So he gets onto this guy's wagon, and they travel for 3 days in a forest, in a mountain. It's a very, very long trip, very far away. Finally, they come to a yar, to a village in the woods, in the middle of the woods, and they're the most beautiful, gorgeous mansions. The whole city is full of gorgeous mansions. So the mayor gets out of the wagon, and the guy who brought him says, I'm going to put the horses in the wagon in the barn. You go already into the house and check the baby. Make sure the baby's not yellow, that it's healthy, that you can do the bris tomorrow morning. He says, fine, no problem. He comes into the house, and he goes to the room where the baby is. It's where the mother is, too. He knocks on the door. You can't just walk in. And the woman of the house says, come on, come in. He walks in, and she says, Moyel, thank you very, very much. That you came tonight to give a circumcision to my son. But you need to know that my husband is not human. He's a shindalad.
What is that?
Shindalad is a devil, a bad angel. Actually, in English, a halfling. They could change themselves into any form. The only thing they can't change is their feet. Their feet are webbed like ducks. The Gemara talks about a lot. The famous one was named Ashmedai, who was the king of the Shadim. And Shlomo HaMelech had a hard time with him. He finally caught him. There's a whole Gemara, that Ashmedai was guarding the Shamir, the worm. It's an interesting Gemara. So there was a worm. The Beis HaMikdash, when you built the Beis HaMikdash, you weren't allowed to cut the stones with steel. Because steel is a sword, which is a killing. And the Beis HaMikdash is a thing that's made for peace. So how do you cut such huge stones to make walls? So Hashem, when he created the world, Erev Shabbos, one of the 10 things he created was this worm. He would make a line, the worm would follow the line, and wherever it would crawl, it would crack. So they would have, that's how they made, that's how the Kaisel, that's how it was made. So who guarded this worm? Who watched this worm that no one should get it? Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim. So Shlomo HaMelech's general knew where this Ashmedai lived. And Ashmedai would come back at the end of the day, right? And he would drink a whole well of water in one gulp. So how are you going to capture such a being? So Shlomo HaMelech was very smart. He told Ashmedai, he told, I think it was Binyahu, his general, he told him, go when Ashmedai leaves in the morning and filter out all the water and fill it up with wine. What's he going to do? He's going to come, take one gulp. He's going to drink all the wine. He's going to make him tired. He's going to fall asleep. When he falls asleep, there was a chain that had Hashem's real name on it. Chain him with this name. After that, he can't do anything to anybody. And steal the Shamir. Okay, that's one story of Ashmedai. Anyway, they capture him, and they put him in jail. And there's a whole story how he spoke to Shlomo HaMelech. And he told Shlomo HaMelech, just take me out of these chains, and I'll give you all the secrets of the other world. And Shlomo HaMelech fell for it, and he took him out. And the Gemara says he took Shlomo HaMelech and he threw him across the world. And for many years, Shlomo HaMelech was traveling and saying, I am the Shlomo HaMelech, I am the king. And people were laughing at him. They said, you're a king. You're running around. The king is in Yerushalayim. Meanwhile, Ashmedai turned himself into Shlomo HaMelech, except for his feet. So nobody knew. But his general saw how much he was eating. It's a whole long Gemara on this. The general saw how much he was eating. He knew that Shlomo HaMelech couldn't eat that much. So they were very suspect. But Lemaisa, he looked exactly like Shlomo HaMelech. And in the end, Shlomo HaMelech gets back. They go in front of Beis Din. He says, he's Shlomo HaMelech. He says, he's Shlomo HaMelech. They look exactly alike. He makes him take off his shoes. And then Ashmedai was sent with Hashem's name to the next world. And that's why you say in Tehillim that Shlomo HaMelech slept with 60 gebeirim, 60 soldiers around his bed every single night, because he was still scared that the Shindalad could come back. And you should know that the Shindalad they're still around. And I can even tell you a story that just mamash happened. The Gemara says that they live in the gutters and in the windows of your house, in the windowsills of your house. So we know la halacha that you're never allowed to close a window. In other words, not close a window, but if I, let's say, want to redo this room, I can't take those windows and close it up with wood or brick or whatever it is, because that's where they live. And what happens is, if you close up a window, you force them into your house. You force them into your house, people get sick, people die, people get poor. They're mazikim. They're damaging angels. They're bad. They're not good. So I just had a story, and I'm not going to say where, but I'm sure that the girl is watching it because she watches all my shirim, where, and I'm not a big mekobel at all, but I know this halacha. And what you do is, if, even if you want to close the window, you drill a hole from the inside to the outside, a teeny little hole with a little drill bit, and you put a straw, a teeny little straw in that hole, and that's fine for them. They can live in there. But you don't force them into your house. So you cannot completely close the window. So if you're doing construction, any frum guy that does construction does that. He knows if you close the window or a door to the outside, that you have to make this hole. Everybody knows. Anyway, so this girl calls me up, and she says to me that it's crazy. Her sister has this disease. Her father broke his arm. Her mother has this. And this is just lately, this is all happening in her house. And her father lost his job. And I'm listening to this, and I'm like, shadim alert. You know, something's not normal here. So I said to her, could you ask your father if you did any construction in the house? Anyway, to make a long story short, they closed a window and a door in their house. They did construction, and they closed it. And I said, right away, take a drill, get someone to do it, drill a hole in both places, and put the straw in. To make a long story short, and she's my witness, she's watching this, that her sister's disease is gone. And the doctors are saying that it's impossible. They need to take more tests, because it's impossible that the disease is gone. Her the one that broke her, that had their arm problem, is gone. And it mamish looks like that was the only problem that was going on there. They're not sure. Should they still move? Because now you know it's a little creepy, right? So should they still move? So they're sending me actually to Eretz Yisrael to ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I have their names, if they should still move. Even though they fixed it here, whatever, he called me up, the father, that after they made the hole and the thing, that the next morning he got up very early to go to Davin, and he was sitting drinking a tea before Davining, and all of a sudden there was a huge crash in that room that there was a hole. I'm like, okay, you know. All right, I believe you, whatever. But Lamaisa, the reason I'm telling you this is you have to be very careful. You have to be very careful when you do your house, or if you move into a house, make sure, if you look on the outside of a house and you see bricked up, like a window, shape of a window bricked up, you must make a hole through it. You don't want to mess with these guys. They don't like humans at all. Anyway, so she tells this male that you should know that I'm a Jewish girl, and I was captured by them, and I ended up having to marry this one, and I had a child, and this is my child. And we learned from this whole story, it's brought down in halacha, that a Jewish child, a Jewish woman, human, with a shin dalid man, the child is chayiv as a Jewish person, is chayiv in mila and everything else, and kol haTorah kula. It's actually learned from this chaf hei in Kav Yashar. So anyway, if you don't believe me, you can buy Kav Yashar in English and read it. And he wrote this 350 years ago, and he was a very, very big tzaddik. And this is not the first time. The reason I told these people is because I've seen this very, very often, where people closed up a window and things happened in the house, and people got sick. So it's just something you have to be very makbid, that if you do construction, you make sure that if you cover up the window, that you make a hole through it. Anyway, so now he's in a panic. And she said, you need to know that this whole city is all shadim. So you're surrounded by shadim. And he's like, what do I do? So she said that you need to know, and this, by the way, we learn in Kabbalah also, that as long as you don't take something from the other side, they can't control you. But if you take something from them, then you're connected to them, she said, you will never get out of here. So no matter what they offer you to eat, to drink, don't take anything, and don't tell my husband that I told you this, he'll kill me. So the husband comes in, he makes believe like he doesn't know anything, and the husband says, listen, tonight is the night before the bris. By Sfardim, it's called the Zohar. By Chassidim, it's called the Vachnacht. The night before the bris, you make a big su'uda. And he said to the Mayo, you'll come to the su'uda, my friends are coming, and we'll all eat together. And he said, I'll tell you the truth, it was a very long trip. It was 3 days, a very long trip. I'm extremely tired. If I'm very tired tomorrow when I do the bris, I have to be very awake and very sharp. I need to go to sleep. I'll see you in the morning. Okay. The next morning, he comes, he does the bris milah, and they invite him to the bris. The mohel has to wash, right? So he says to the father, I'm really sorry, but last night when I went to sleep, I had a terrible, frightful dream. And the halacha is that if you have a terrible, frightful dream and it bothers you very much, that you need to fast. It's called a tanas chaloim. So he says, I took on this morning a tanas chaloim. I would love to eat from the bris, but I can't. So he was good. He was safe. He didn't take anything from them. Okay? So now he says, I did the bris. I want to go home. Take me home. So the shindalid says to him, and he was the head of the town, the shindalid, I'll take you home, but we have to stop by my warehouse before we go. He says, no, I want to go straight home. He goes, no, you don't understand. We're stopping at my warehouse. So he takes him to this warehouse on the outskirts of town. The mohel thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to kill me. He's going to eat me. I don't know what he's going to do. He's going to chop me up. You know, I'm going to be, you know, served for the cholent next Shabbos. He's all nervous. He takes him in. He says, I have three rooms. And I want you to see what's in all three rooms. So he takes him to the first room. And the first room is a room. And the Gemara talks about this. If you ever lose something, if you ever lose something, something you don't know that you have, that's what Hashem gave their permission. That's what they live off. That's what they collect. So that's why it says, you have to be careful not to count because there's an ayin hara. You have to be careful not to count. Because if there's something you have that you don't know about, they will come and take it. That's what they get. They gather all the ships that sunk to the bottom of the sea. That's what they gather. Stolen loot, that's what they gather. That's what they live on. The Gemara talks about it. That's what they live on. So he opens up this door to this room, and the room is full of gold. All the king's gold, all the stuff that was ever stolen, and it's amazing. But this guy's a rich guy. The miser, the mohel, is a rich guy. So he turns to the shindalid, and he says, I appreciate it. He says, you can take anything you want from me. What you did for me, you came all this way to circumcise my son, whatever you want. He says, but you don't understand. I'm richer. I'm as rich as you are. I have warehouses like this. I'm not interested. He says, okay. Room number two. Takes him to room number two, and he opens up the door, and it's full of diamonds and jewels and other stuff that they've been stealing. And he says, take any jewel you want, any diamond you want, any sapphire you want. And he's like, I don't want any of this stuff. I told you, I don't need this. I have enough money. So he takes him to the third room. And he opens the door of the third room, and the mohel is standing there, and he turns white, and his knees begin to shake, and his mamash about to faint. The whole room was full of human heads. I'm joking. It wasn't. I wouldn't tell you the story if it was. I'm kidding. It wasn't. The room was full of keys. Keys. The whole room. Thousands of keys. So the shindalid turned. Yes, that's exactly where it is. The shindalid, Ruth lost her ring. That's where it is. It's in some, okay. Whatever. It'll end up, whatever. Anyway. But, Mitzvah Hashem, you'll find it. I still say you'll find it. They'll give it back to you. Anyway, so, it's full of keys. So the shindal turns to him and says, What are you shaking? Why are you so white? He says, because those keys on the wall opposite me, that's my keychain. How did you get my keychain? All my keys are on that keychain. How did you get my keychain? This is very important. Now, the Kabbalah Yasha is not a storybook. This is not Grimm's fairy tales. The Kabbalah Yasha, I gave a shiur last night from the Kabbalah Yasha on Shevivim. And you can ask the guys. This book is known in Kabbalah as the book from the other world that has all the secrets of the other world. This was written by Rav Sadenover 350 years ago. The Chidah had it on his table at all times. The Noam Elimelech had it on his table at all times. He doesn't tell you stories. There's a reason that he speaks about this. So he looks at the shindal. He says, where'd you get my keys from? So the shindal said something very fascinating. He said, every person in this room, every person that comes to this world is born with bechira. You have a choice. Yes, no, yes, no. But if you ever worked with an addictive person, a person who's an alcoholic, so he's a human being, he has a choice, But he lost his choice. Because if you put in front of an alcoholic a bottle of whiskey, he can't say no. If you give money to a gambler, he can't say no. If you give drugs to an addicted drug user, he can't say no. What do you mean you can't say no? You're a human being. You're not a dog. You're not a flower. You're not a rock. Say no. Say no to drugs, right? Say no to alcohol. Or in my house, the big sign, say no to chocolate. That's for me. What happens, the Rambam says, and the Kav Yosha says, when you do something over and over and over and over again, you lose your power of choice. It becomes an addiction. In Kabbalah, it's called a key. What does a key do? A key opens and closes. If you don't have a key, you can't open and you can't close. You're addicted. You lose that power. So, a person takes one drink, right? But if he continues drinks, if he continually runs away from his pain into eating, just overeating, right? It could be anything. It could be eating, it could be drinking whiskey, it could be doing drugs, it could be gambling, it could be anything. He doesn't have the key to say no. So the Shindala told the Mayal, the first time they asked you for the duck, you said no, you still had the key to say yes. But you continuously said no and no and no and no. Now you can't say yes. I took your keys. We have permission to take a human being's keys away from him when it comes to choice. If he continuously does the same thing over and over and over again, and I want you to know that I'm dealing right now, and it's the first time that I realized it, but it's fascinating and it's sick and it's very sad. So I'm dealing with a bunch of different girls from different places, not just New York, from different places, and the problem is this texting on Shabbos. Now, there's a girl that I just was dealing with, and I met her when her parents told me about this, and I figured I'm gonna meet some defiant street kid or rebel. And I met the most frum, good girl. And she sits down in front of me, and we know that she's texting. She admits, I text on Shabbos, and there's a group in Brooklyn, and there's a group in Lakewood, and there's a group in Muncie, and there's a group in other places, and we, all us girls, they're all frum girls, we all text each other on Shabbos. So I said to her, let me ask you something. Would you turn on a light on Shabbos? Chas v'shalom. I said, would you drink coffee from a Keli Rishon, just the hot water straight into the cup and not pour that water into another cup? Would you drink from a Keli Rishon? Absolutely not, only Keli Shani. I said, I don't understand. You're on your phone on Friday night. You're on your phone on Shabbos. Don't you realize that that's worse than Keli Rishon, Keli Shani? What's the difference between turning on a light and turning on your phone? And for the first time in my life, after talking to her, I realized that she doesn't need a rabbi. She doesn't need Rabbi Wallenstein. And she doesn't need a class in Kedusha. She needs an addiction therapist. She's addicted to the phone. This has nothing to do with God. This has nothing to do with angry. This has nothing to do with the rebellion. She's shamer. Kulei mitzvah, she doesn't talk to boys. She's not texting boys on Shabbos. There's a group of frum girls. And they're all frum girls. And they're shamer Shabbos. They think they're shamer Shabbos. Chutz me texting. And they're not only texting, they're on the phone. And I realized I can't help her. She lost her key. She doesn't know how to go through a 24-hour period without being on that phone. So I said, you're sending them to the wrong person. It's not Rabbi Wallenstein that can help her. She's addicted like a drug addict. She's addicted like a gambler. There's absolutely no difference. She does not want to do it. She does not want to do it. She knows it's wrong. But there's a shindalid closet that has her key when it comes to phones on Shabbos. Because she did it once, and she did it twice, and she did it three times, and not on Shabbos. But during the week, she became addicted, and she can't stop. So I sent her to an addiction specialist. It's nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. So Facebook and the whole texting, I think we missed it. I came and talked about it all the time from a Yiddishkeit point of view, which is, of course, a very big point of view. and from a danger point of view. But I never spoke about it from an addiction point of view. And if the people who are on Facebook or the texting, it's an addiction that you don't even realize that you're doing it. Many times your parents or your husband or whoever it is will tell you, get off the phone, or, you know, stop texting, and you don't even realize that you texted, and you know, especially girls, they text and then they delete, and they text and then they delete, because God forbid anyone should read afterwards, right? So it's like one motion, texting and deleting it, right? You don't even realize that you texted and you deleted. You don't even realize it. When you're told you did 10,000 minutes of texting, like, what are you talking about? You don't even realize it. How many times is the phone in your hand, and you're talking on it, and you're looking for it? You're on the phone, and you're like, I can't believe where I put my phone. As you're talking to somebody, right? So that we lost our keys. It's happened to everyone. Don't sit there and not laugh, like, not me. It happens to everyone. You're on your phone, you're like, where did I put my phone while you're talking? It happens to all of us, right? So it becomes an addiction. And once it becomes an addiction, then it breaks marriages, and it breaks relationships, and it breaks Shabbos. And it breaks everything down. So what happened here was, he didn't give tzedakah till he didn't have the key. He could not give tzedakah. He lost the key. He had no more choice. Now you might say, that's not fair, Hashem, that's not fair. Hashem didn't take the key away. He gave the key away. So this Shindalit said to him, because you did bris milah for me, because you did this for me, I will give you back your keys. And he said, I don't want anything from you. And he said, he didn't know that his wife said it, so he said to him, you must be very close to God. Nobody knows that if they take something from us, that they can never get away. And you were sick, and then you had bad dreams. The luck that you had must be from God. So I'm going to tell you a secret, he said. If I give you your keys back, I didn't give you anything. They're your keys. So if I give you your keys back, we don't own you. It's only if I give you something that's not yours. But those are your keys. Therefore, I'll give them back. And the Kaviyosha says that he comes back to town, and he drops them off, and he builds a yeshiva, and he builds a shul, and he gives tzedakah, and he starts a whole Teimche Shabbos, and he could not stop giving money out because he got his keys back. And the end of the Kaviyosha says, at the end of the day, what was this chus that this whole thing happened to him? Because now he went to Gan Eden, and he gave all this tzedakah out, right? What was the schus? And he says that the schus was that he did the bris milah for free. Because he did the bris milah, he did an action. Because he did the bris milah for free, and he did this action, that's what saved him. So what happened in Montreal was, I was plugging away a whole Shabbos. But what happened was that these girls understood that if they're going to go home monthly Shabbos, go back on whatever I spoke about, whether it was Facebook or CS, whatever the subject I spoke to, go back, the same person that came, nothing's going to change in their life. And that's what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu. Now's not the time to talk. Now's not the time for speeches. And I used to be a big entertainer. Everyone, if you listen to my shiurim in 07 and 08, all I did was tell stories. I told some crazy stories. I would get up here, I would not say Dvar Torah. I would tell stories because I knew that the ladies love stories, funny stories and exciting stories, and Rabbi Wallerstein tells unbelievable stories. And one day someone said to me, you know, you're an amazing storyteller. You should be on Broadway. And I said, that's not what I'm on this world for. So I decided after that, I changed, and I said, when I give a shiur, I got to give them something to change, not just to entertain them. You got to give them an idea, a thought, something they can go home and use it and change. No more fluff. Last night, my share, you'll never hear. It was so rough to my boys last night that I turned off I was going to tape it so that we could have it. Not to put on Torah anytime, that we can have it. I told them, we shouldn't even have it. I'm going to say it once, I'm not saying it again. And we didn't tape it. I think one guy did it when I wasn't looking under the... There's always that one guy. And one guy said, why don't you just put it up on Torah anytime and write, for men only. I said, I did that once, 2 years ago. The most hits ever from women was to that chair. So I'm not doing that again. But I was very tough last night. I was very tough. And they came over to me afterwards and said, Ray Wallstein, thank you. I'm like, thank you. I ripped you guys to pieces. And they're like, that's right. Now we're going to change. The story is we're not going to change. So I'm not. It's not Facebook. It's about anything. Anything that a person is doing continuously wrong over and over and over again. I know girls that watch DVDs for hours. For hours. They told me they don't even enjoy it anymore. It's just on. They're just watching it. It's not even enjoyment anymore. It's I can't on a Matzah Shabbos go through a Matzah Shabbos without a movie. You didn't like the movie. The movie is not something that's even something that you're interested in. Doesn't matter. I need to have that movie. You lost your keys. If you need, there's a saying in addiction. If you have to have something, you're not allowed to have it. If you don't need it, you're allowed to have it. And that's what happened in this story. And the reason I'm telling you this is that's what happened with Paro. With Paro, it seems like it's not fair. It's not fair. What happened? Ki ani echbarati eslev Paro. That's what it says. Ki ani echbarati eslev Paro. But actually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, echbarati eslev Paro, I took his keys. Where did you have a right to take his keys? Because nobody realizes that, forget about that Paro said, I'm not letting you out. But what happened in the beginning? Two things happened. He gave up his keys. One, Vayakom Melech Chadosh, Asher lo yada as Yosef. The number one key everybody in this room needs to know. To be close to Hashem, to be in relationships that are healthy, to live a healthy life, and to be a good person. The number one key is Hakaras HaTayv. Appreciation. Not taking anything for granted. Because if you don't take anything for granted, then you definitely don't take God for granted. Of everything that he gives you, that you can breathe, that you can see, that you can hear, that your brain can work, that anything, that you can't take that. You don't take your mother for granted and your father for granted, who brought you into the world, even though the world might not be the greatest place. But none of us are running out of the world. And at the bottom, at the end of the day, your mother suffered 9 months with you, went through labor, burped you, diapered you, worried about you, took you to the doctor. You scratched her when she tried to give you medicine. You fought her. You're a teenager. Your mom put her through Gehenna, right? And all that, and she's still there. Mom's still there, right? And if you don't have a karas hatayv for that, then that's the basis, by the way, of our generation, of our problems in this generation. This is the I generation. You owe me. My generation is we always felt we owed them. My parents did this for me, I owe them, right? And they didn't want anything to pay back. But we had that feeling of a karas hatayv. Now, it doesn't work that way. Give me an iPhone. You owe me an iPhone. Why do I owe you an iPhone? Because everyone in my class has an iPhone. That means I owe you an iPhone. And then when you buy them the iPhone 4, right? Then when it comes out to 5, well, now upgrade me to the 5. And I've seen kids scream at their parents like that. It wasn't like, please, I can't believe you're doing this for me. Thank you. This is a generation where everybody owes everybody everything. And not slowly. Now! I want it now! I just had a situation, and I apologize to anyone who's watching this. I got a phone call from Eretz Yisrael that somebody needed help. And I said I would call this person and try to help them. And I tried once, I didn't get through, and I've totally forgot. I have crazy amount of things on my head, and really, I'm an emergency room doctor. Whatever comes front, that's what I take care of, and people know that. So the people who want to get to me, and I'm not trying to advertise that, you should know that, but they continuously, they don't wait, oh, he didn't call me back. They keep calling until they get me. So I have a million things on my head, Baruch Hashem. I'm not complaining, Hashem should give me more. Good things, only good things. Yeah. My father taught me, if your plate is full, get a bigger plate. So, I'm cool. I forgot about it. Yesterday, I get an email from the person who have nothing to do with Israel, who's part of an organization that has 1,000 people working for it, $20 million, right? Who called me, you're the only guy that can help. Okay? I don't have anybody but besides myself working with kids. I don't have $20 million. I don't have 1,000 people. So I try. And I don't know how to say no. I'm in therapy right now learning how to say no. right? You have to learn how to say no. Sometimes you have to say no. No means you're free. A slave always says yes. Yes, master, yes, master, yes, master. A person who has freedom, he has the ability to say no. If you say yes all the time, you get abused. You can't say yes all the time. There's times where you have to say no. You have to live yourself. And many of us don't realize that. And we give and we give and we give until there's nothing left of us. And the Torah is very happy. You could have lived 90 years and just given every year, but, you know, you burn out. We burn out. And their teachers, they burn out. And they don't want to teach anymore. They can't take it anymore. So this letter was from this person who did it. I'm sure he didn't mean anything. But the Yetzirah is the Yetzirah. What does it say in there? It says, Rabbi Wallerstein, I guess losing a girl from Klal Yisrael means nothing to you.
Oh.
That's the email.
Oh,
now, here I am. Don't worry about me. I'm good. My father did a good job. Don't worry about it. So it's a trigger. I'm not going to tell you it's not a trigger because there's nothing worse as I'm coming from this hospital and that hospital dealing with the 13-year-old and the 18-year-old and the 19-year-old running around the whole world trying to help everyone. Boom! There's nothing worse you could have told me is, I guess you don't care about Jews because I didn't take care of his problem. That's this world. Take care of me. Take care of me now. Take care of my problem. And if you don't, you're evil. Maybe that person has a life. So, no hakaras hatov, no appreciation. Avivit knows this. Is another. I got another email from someone who asked me a question. And I don't like emails altogether. I don't have them on my phone. So until I get there, until she gives it to me, until I read it, until I remember that I put it there, right? So I got an email from someone who asked me a question. And I didn't answer it. So right away, the nasty email came. So I sent back an email. And I said, instead of being nasty, why don't you send back an email? It seems to be Wallstein's a good guy. And I sent him an email, and he didn't answer me. Must be he's very, very busy. Could I volunteer for a novel and take some of the pressure off him? That's the email I should have gotten. That's the email of a person who thinking not about me. You got to help me. You got to help me now. And you send me back an email now. You're wicked. You're no good. She called me every name in the book. A phony, a fake, Yeshira Marwal. She ripped me to pieces. So I sent back to her. I said, send an email. If I'm sending it to this guy, he doesn't answer me back, right? And even if I write an email, I'll send you a check. He still doesn't answer me back, right? Must be he's very busy. So a person who has a karas hatov, a person who's not into themselves, sends, wow, he must be crazy busy. He didn't answer me. Maybe I can help. Maybe I can get my friends to come. Maybe we can bring 10 girls and help him answer his emails. Nah. Rip them. It's about me. That's this generation. It's the me, it's the I generation. It's the we with the, you know, W-I-I. Now there's a we me, I think. A we something. A we I, a we you. I don't know, whatever. There's a new we. We I, we you. Something. What? We me. It's a we me. Right, we me. Nice, very nice. So the key to have a relationship with a husband, because it's the same thing husband and wife. If it's all about me, right, then if she doesn't have supper on the table, and if she's not ready when I want her to be ready, and she's not this and she's not that, I'm going to have a fight with her. Meanwhile, hello, how about thinking if she doesn't have supper on the table and she's not ready, maybe she needs help with the kids. So maybe when you call her and it's 5:45 from davening and you're like, you ready to go to the wedding? And she's like, no, I need 45 minutes. Instead of yelling, I can't believe we're going to be late again, say, oh my goodness, I should have come home at 5:00 today to make sure that you would be ready. It's all based on the eye. It's all based on the lack of hakaras hatov. And it's the same thing with kibbutzim with kids. It's the same thing. The Gemara says it was going to happen. The same thing. The lack of appreciation of our parents, of what they're going through, of when we come home an hour late, of what they're thinking. My daughter, whoever's not a parent, we have crazy imagination. Even a woman who has no imagination, when your kid's missing for an hour and you keep trying to reach her and you can't reach her, you have these crazy pictures that they took her and they chopped her up to little pieces and they mailed her to every postal code in the United States and you're never going to find her again. And you have these crazy things in your head as a parent. Crazy things. The bridge. My husband didn't call me. The bridge caved in. It was a bomb. I can't reach him. Right? And now because of the cell phones, if you can't reach him, he must be dead because he always answers his phone. And you go crazy. That hour, your mom is taking that. Your mother's in the shama out. You're taking that person's shama out. And you come home. Hi, Ma. Sorry for being late. What's for dinner? And meanwhile, on the kitchen table, there's 500 Kleenexes crumpled up. Because she was sitting there, she was already sitting shiva for this kid. She figured she'd gone an hour. She must be dead. It's got she, right? And we don't understand what we just did to our mother and our father and our husbands and wives. And it's all based on one thing. Rav Shimshon said, it's all based on one thing. A lack of a kursa type. That's all it's based on. And you know what happens? If you continuously lack to appreciate, it's very sad, you can't appreciate anymore. Because they have your key of appreciation. And then when you want to appreciate that someone did something good for you, you can't. And you're like, nah, they had to do it. They didn't do it because they wanted to do it. They had to do it. You lose that key. That key is the key to any relationship in the world. If you don't have that key, you cannot have a relationship with Hashem. If you don't have a Kursa Toiv, and I want you to leave with this tonight. That's the thing that I want you to work with tonight. I'm not telling you stories. I want you to leave tonight and say, I need my key back. Now, it's interesting because the Rambam says, so what happens if you lost your key? So this is a very nice story. Bris Mila, he met them in the town, right? He got his key back. Me, I don't know no Shindalas, and I don't want to know them, and I'm not a mile, and I'm not going to their town. So, the Chama, how do we get the key back? They took our key. How do we get the key back? So there's a Rambam on it. And the Rambam says that the rabbis asked, how do you get your key back? How could have Paro gotten his key back? Now, Paro lost his key way before this, because Paro had no appreciation. There was good ladies, there was no Mitzrayim without Yosef. Yosef came down, they were having 7 good years, and then they would have 7 bad years, and the Mitzrayim would have been destroyed. Yosef made them save. He built single-handedly the Egyptian empire. How dare you? And according to Rashi, it could have been the same king, Yochem El Chadosh, the same king. How dare you enslave the brothers and sisters of the person who built the empire? Paro had no problem. Let's make a plan how to destroy them. Let's take their children and throw them in the Nile River. Kill the boys. I want to bathe in their blood. Hashem said, and now when I'm going to come to you with blood, or I'm going to come to you with a makkah, you think you're going to have the ability to let them go and get away with all that? No. You gave up your keys. But Yochem El Chadosh, when you forgot about everything that was done for you, you gave up your keys. When you took Jewish kids and threw them in the Nile River or killed them and bathed in their blood, you no longer have your keys. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his keys away. And therefore he could not let Klal Yisrael, and he had to go through until Makas Becharis, until the whole Mitzrayim had to be destroyed. Why was Mitzrayim destroyed, ladies? Why did the whole Mitzrayim have to be destroyed? Hashem could have made it very easy. The Mitzrayim are on one side, the Jews are on the other side, the Jews go through the Yam, the water comes back, the Mitzrayim are left in Egypt, the Jews go to Israel, the Egyptians can't get to them. Have a good day. There was no Suez Canal. Have a good day. You have to wipe out the whole Egyptian nation. Because the Egyptian nation stood for Kafli Toiv. They stood for, these were the people. You know why you have beautiful palaces? You know why you have money? You know why you have slaves? They enslaved the whole world. Because when the world ran out of money, they said, if you want to eat, you have to become our slaves. So the Jewish nation, they did this all for you. So you're evil. You're evil. Is that you would have no Kursa Tov to this nation. Just leave them alone. We didn't ask you for anything. Let us stay in Goshen and learn. You made us slaves. You killed us. You killed our children. That nation had to be destroyed. That empire had to be destroyed. No HaKaras HaTov, destruction. Sidaim. No HaKaras HaTov, destruction. The world by Noach. No HaKaras HaTov, destruction. You can't leave that in the world because there's no relationships if there's no HaKaras HaTov. And that's what happened in this parasha. And what happened by the Jews? The Jews were being tested on Bitachon, and Bitachon, I'll finish with this, Bitachon is based on HaKaras HaTov, and based on understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us and He's everything to us. That's what Bitachon is. I'm going to give you a little knetch, a little bit of a different understanding of Bitachon, but that is what Bitachon is. I just want to tell you one thing really fast, which blew me away. There's somebody in London, in my phone, it's called Dvar Torah London, right? And he called me today and he left me a message. He watches my shiurim. This is unbelievable. I never heard this before. So if you look at in both the three makas, Arba, Choshech, and Makas Bechoros, those are the three makas. Arba were locusts, they ate everything. You're not going to see here anywhere that Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro that Arba is coming. Nothing. They came to Paro, they said, how long are you going to refuse to let my people go? He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never tells Moshe Rabbeinu what he's going to bring. God, in every other mark, he says, I'm going to bring Dam, tell him I'm going to bring Dam. I'm going to bring Tzadidah, tell him I'm going to bring Tzadidah. By Arba, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro that locusts are going to come, but it never says that Hashem tells Moshe about Arba. It just says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, bo al Paro, go al Paro, kenich barati his libo, I made him, right, I made his heart hard, lemat tesaper, and nothing. And Moshe and Aaron come, and they say, so says Hashem, if you're going to refuse to let them go, tomorrow I'm bringing Arba. How did Moshe Rabbeinu know that Arba was coming? Doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Hashem told him Arba is coming. Good question. This is the question at the table on Shabbos. You ask your husband, ask your father, ask your brother. It does not say anywhere in the Torah that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu he's bringing Arba. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu get this to tell Paro that he's bringing Arba? Listen to this. Amazing. There are two letters. There are two letters that are switchable in the Aleph Beis. We see that many times in Gematrius. We see that many times in... Leave it. We see it many times in different things in Kabbalah, and those two letters are an aleph and an aleph and an ayin and a pay and a bays, because a pay and a bays is the pay is peh, right? And an aleph and an ayin have the same sound. Listen to this. So Hashem said like this: Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, bo the letters bays aleph. Come, El Paro. We always ask, why does it say Bo El Paro? It should say go to Paro, right? Bo El Paro, come to Paro. It should say go to Paro. So he says like this, if you take the word Bo and you put it into Paro, what do you get? So if you take the Beis instead of the Pei, because they interchange, right? And if you take the Aleph instead of the Ayin, it spells Arba. Aleph, Reish, Beis, Hey. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, V'yarmer Hashem El Moshe, Bo El Paro. Put the letters Bo into Paro instead of the Pei and the Ayin, and you will get Arba. And then the pasuk says, "Leman shisi oisoisai eile bekirboy." Oisoisai also means letters. In order that you should put these letters bekirbo in the word Paro. If you put the letters Beis Aleph into the word Paro, and the Beis replaces the Pei, and the Aleph replaces the Ayin, it spells Arba. And that's how Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Makkah of Abba was coming. And the next pasuk, he tells Paro, yes, the Makkah that's coming is Arba. The Noyu de Gavor. Okay. Anyway, so I want to talk to you for a second on, and then we'll let you go, on Bitochon. From the very big kasha. And the kasha is like this. It says on Rosh Hashanah that you're supposed to get dressed in beautiful clothing. You're supposed to take a shower. You're supposed to take a haircut. Right? Because it's a yontif. It also says on Rosh Hashanah that you don't say halal. And they ask, why don't you say halal on Rosh Hashanah? Because Baruch Hu answers, my creations are being judged for life and death, and you want to sing my praises? No. So it's a stira. If it's a yontif, say halal. If it's not a yontif, right, and it's a court day, then you don't take a shower, get dressed up fancy in front of the judge, just the opposite. You wear black. You look sad. You want him to feel bad for you. So what's going on over here? So there's a pasuk that says that I will run from you. I will run from you to you. And he's, and I will cover myself from your anger. I will hide in your pity. So he says like this, and this is a big mistake in Bitochon. Everybody thinks that Bitochon means, oh, Shiduchim? I have Bitochon, I'm not worried. Shiduchim, Hashem will take care of. Panasa? Oh, I'm not worried. I have Bitochon, Hashem will take care of my Panasa. You know, bombs in Israel? I'm not worried. Hashem will take care of that. No, that is not what it means. Bitochon means that nobody can help me. I'm not doing well in business, I'm in big trouble. I can't find a Shidduch, I'm in huge trouble. Things that I'm not healthy, I'm in crazy trouble. But where do I go to fix that trouble? To you. To you, Hashem. That's what bitachon. Bitachon doesn't mean not to be scared. Because if you're not scared, you're not going to daven. Oh, I'm not worried about a shidduch. Hashem will take care of it. So you're not going to daven. You're not going to cry. You're not going to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not going to run to him. Right? The famous story in the bear suit. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eicha, it says he appeared to us as a bear and as a father. What happens? When you come in, my father used to do this. Purim, he'd get dressed up in all these scary stuff and all the grandchildren would run. They'd be crying and screaming and everything else. And the minute he would lift the thing, they'd go, oh, it's Zaidi! And they would all run to him. Because as long as you think it's a bear, you run away. When you realize it's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu underneath, right? Then you run towards. She says, when you realize there's a problem, you become scared. You don't have a lack of bitachon. What do you do with that scared? You run to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is bitachon. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to end with a story. It's in the Gemara. I'm talking a lot of Gemara tonight. And it's a very fascinating, very beautiful, very deep story. We'll end with this. So the Gemara says like this. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. There was a Tana called Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. He was extremely poor. And in those days, for health, they used to call letting blood. They would take leeches, and they would put it on their body, and the leeches would suck out the blood and bring down their blood pressure and would make them healthy. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was very poor, but he wasn't feeling well, so he let blood. Now, the minute you finish letting blood, the first thing you need to do is eat, because it makes you very weak. But he was so poor that he had nothing to eat. The only thing he had in his house was garlic. So he started chewing on garlic. And of course, after letting blood and being so weak and chewing on garlic, he fainted straight out. It's a famous story in the Gemara. So his Talmidim came into the house. They heard that Rebbe fainted, and he was laying on a bed. And he was like in this faint, like in a dream. And he was laughing, and he was crying. And then all of a sudden, the Gemara says, there were sparks coming out of his forehead for like a second. And they saw this. So they got him some water, they woke him up, and they said, what's going on over here? Where were you in this dream? So he said, the following happened. When I fainted, I went up to Shemayim. He says, and I asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I asked Hashem, how long do I have to suffer? My whole life, I am so poor. I don't even have bread to eat after I let blood. How long, God, when are you going to be happy? Like, how long do I need to suffer that I'm so poor? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him that, what should I do? You were born in a bad mazel. You were born in a bad mazel, and this is your mazel. But if you want me to change it, I have to destroy the world. You have to be born again, and maybe this time you'll be born in the right mazel. That's what Hashem told him. So you want me to do that, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he said to Hashem, how long do I have to live? Did I already live more than half my life? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yes, you already lived more than half your life. So he said, in that case, don't destroy the world. Because it's not about me, and you don't have to destroy the whole world. In that case, let it go. Just leave it the way it is. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, you care about the world so much, I will give you a reward, 13 rivers in Gan Eden of apartment. Beautiful, beautiful smelling apartment. That is going to be your reward. He said back to Hashem, that's all? That's all? 13, that's all you're giving me? After all the suffering? And Hashem said, listen, if you're going to get more, your friends are going to lose. So he said back to Hashem, I don't understand. You don't have enough? You have everything. You could give us all. What are you saying that my friends are going to lose? So the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so happy with his answer that he gave him a glitch like on his forehead. Like, wow, beautiful. And when Hashem gave him the glitch on his forehead, there were sparks. So the question is like this, says Rav Shem Pinkus. You go to a wedding, you go to a bris, and people come over to you and they say, Mazel Tov, right? You had 900 people at the wedding. And people, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. According to this Gemara, what are you wasting? If the person's born in a good mazel, have a good life. If the person's born in a bad mazel, have a bad life. What are you giving them a Mazel Tov? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you have to destroy the whole world to turn your mazel. So why do we wish people Mazel Tov? That was the question. So Shimshon answers that if you complain, like he complained, his mistake than what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him was that without tefillah, ladies, without davening, with just coming to me and saying, my life is miserable, how long is this going to last? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't change your mazel. Because if you're just complaining, then you're not depending on Hashem, and therefore you are in teva, and if you're in teva and you're born in a bad mazel, Hashem said, I have to change the whole world, I have to change the teva. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus, had he davened to Hashem, instead of just saying, I have a miserable life, had he come to Hashem and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could you give me a better life? Could you give me a parnasa? I love you and I trust you. He said, then there's no shaila that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have said, I have to turn over the world. With tefillah, Hashem doesn't have to turn over the world. And then he asks, and with this we end. So what was such a great answer that he told Hashem? What's such a great answer that he said that, what do you mean my friends will lose? You have everything. And Hashem loved it so much that he gave him a glet and there were sparks on his forehead. What did he say? I would have answered that. You would have answered that. What do you mean? You worried about my friends? You got everything. So Hashem just says something beautiful and we need to all take this message home. He said, what he was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was that it doesn't matter what anybody else has. My relationship with you is I'm your only son. That my connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not that I am part of the Jewish nation, not that I am a Jew, but I am Chani, your daughter, me and you. So it doesn't matter what's going on in the rest of the world. So if it doesn't matter what's going on in the rest of the world, then I'm your daughter, then you have anything I need. It's sort of when you're looking for someone told me they're looking for a wedding hall. And they couldn't find one in June. It's impossible. Right? Everything was booked, except the days that, you know, the end of the month, whatever. Everything was booked. And he was freaking out. And he's like, I finally got engaged. I finally got over all these years after going out with 100 girls. I finally get engaged. Now I want to get married. And there's nothing in June. I got to take it in August. Because the 9 days in 3 weeks. So he went to his Rebbe. He said, Rebbe, I don't understand. I don't understand. I finally get engaged, and now it's all the banquet halls are taken, and I can't get married? So the Rebbe said, what are you flipping out for? He said, imagine if there's somebody, and he gets engaged, and he wants a hall. He wants to find a hall. And it's in June, and everybody sees the kid sitting back. And he's not nervous. And like, why aren't you nervous? You know, June is the toughest month. And he's like, you know who my father is? Who's your father? He owns, in the whole Brooklyn and Queens, all the halls are his. So you think my father's not going to find me a hall? So he said to this kid, he says, you're worried about a hall? HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns the world. If you damn it to him, he'll find you a hall you never heard of. Somebody might be canceling, or whatever it is. If you understand, what Rav Shimshon is saying like this, bitachon, we think bitachon means that I'm not scared. That I'm sitting in a bomb shelter in Eretz Yisrael when they're shooting missiles, and I'm not scared, God is here. He says, that's not bitachon. That's terrible, because you're not going to daven. Bitachon means, I am scared. And I'm going to go to the only place that's going to protect me, Hashem. That's bitachon. That I am scared, and I have someone to go to that's going to cover me and take care of me. That's real bitachon. He says, not being scared, that's not bitachon. That's taking the easy way. I don't have to daven. I don't have to cry. I don't have to do tshuva. I don't have to do nothing. Hashem, you'll take care of it. You'll take care of it. So yes, girls, you have to be scared. You're not going to find a shidduch. Not walk around, Hashem will take care of my shidduch. No, maybe, chas v'shalom, my mazel is not good. But mazel doesn't matter. Because instead of complaining, I'm going to go to the one who has the keys, who has the master key to everything. That's bitachon. Not that I'm not scared, I'm not worried about a shidduch, I'm not worried about having kids, I'm not worried about anything. That's not bitachon. I'm very worried. But I'm going to take it to God, and after that, I'm not worried anymore. In other words, I'm scared of the situation. My parnasa chas v'shalom is not good. I'm scared because, why am I scared? Because why isn't my parnasa good? Because God wrote it. Says Rav Shimshon, says the Rambam, that God is just waiting for you to ask for that. And if you ask for that, He will give it to you. And I can tell you, I'm not getting into it, but I can tell you that I had an addiction. And I've spoken about it on Shiurim. I had an addiction that is incurable in a normal sense of the matter. And I sat on a floor and cried my eyes out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I knew that this was going to destroy me as a Rebbe, as a father, as a husband. I was gambling so out of control. And it was for years and years, and I talk about it publicly, and for years and years, and I davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help me because I knew that I was going to, and there was a miracle that happened in my life where I owed so much money that I was going to lose my business, I was going to lose everything. And I sat on a floor, and I remember it today, for 3.5 hours crying, Hashem, if you give me a good streak and I pay back all this money and I don't owe anybody money, I swear, I promise, I love you, I will never touch a card again in my life. And he did it. I schlepped poor God into a casino because he did miracles for the next 2 weeks, and I made every penny that I owed, which was impossible. And I paid every casino back. And I was even. And I knew that Hashem did a nes nifla. And 3 months later, I was playing again. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu did such a miracle, after the impossible happened, after I sat on the floor and swore that I would never play again, I did not have my keys. I could not stop. Till it came to a point on a Friday night that I davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I said, I apologize. I know you did this for me, and I apologize. Then I went right back into it, and I promise you, just give me my key back. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this. I have a family. I'm a Rebbe. Please help me. And that Friday night, I missed the minyan that I was supposed to go to, and I davened next door in Muncie by a shul called Rabbi Aderet's shul. And I walked into a shul. He's a Sephardi rabbi, so they wait between Mincha and Meir Friday night. We don't. We go straight into Meir. And I was in that room, and they were waiting. They were learning. I put my hand by the bookshelf, and I pulled out a sefer. I never heard of the sefer in my life. The sefer was called the Kava Yosha, the sefer of this story, of this addiction, of this mayal, of his not ability to give money. And in a perek in Kava Yosha, it said the following. I just opened it up. I never saw this book. I opened it up. And this is what I opened up to. It said that when God created the world, the devil, the Yetzer Hara, said to Hashem, if you want me to do my job, you have to give me the same power that you have. Because it has to be an even fight. I have to be able to do the same thing you do. Otherwise, it's not Bechira. And he said, the one thing you didn't give me, Hashem, is money. I have to be able to reward bad people just like you reward good people. So a drug dealer has to become rich. A person who sells human bodies has to become rich. A Jew that works on Shabbos, how does he make his money? How does a Jew on Shabbos make money? You think God gives him the money? The parnasa comes from Hashem? The shefa comes from Hashem? It comes from the other side. So the Satan has as much money and the power to give money as God. And in that paragraph it says, when a gambler wins money, it comes from the Satan. Hashem does not give money to play cards. Because karten, the word card, says the Bnei Yisrael, kuf, resh, tes, nun, equals 359. Right? If you add it up, the word satan equals 359. Cards and satan are the same gematria. And it said in there that it comes from the dark side. And anything that is done with that money, from Chilul Shabbos, from stealing, from making money not honestly, from playing cards, from gambling, anything made from that money belongs to them, to the Satan. So if you pay a yeshiva to learn, all that Torah goes to the Satan. You buy a Sefer Torah, you made a good gamble, you made a lot of money, you buy the shul of Sefer Torah, every word that's written in that Sefer Torah goes to them. All the Kedusha from that money goes to them, and that's what feeds them. I'm reading this, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then comes the worst part. And then when a person dies, since the mezainos, the food that he got, was from not legal stuff, and that came from the Satan, you belong to him. Because he supported you your whole life, and he takes that person and he puts him in the 7th level of Gehenim, never to get out. I'm like, hello? Like, is this a fairy tale? This is not a real book, right? I learned the whole Kava Yosha. After that, I teach Kava Yosha. Because it saved my life. It saved my life. From that day, from that Friday night on, it was 15 years ago. Never gambled, looked at a card, had anything to do with it at all. Zero. How did you? And I get phone calls, and they say, it's not an addiction you can break. It breaks you. You're addicted till you have no money, no house, no car. You stole from everybody. Nobody breaks this addiction. Wallerstein. It's 3 years. How is it possible on the level that you played that you're not here anymore? Are you offshore? Are you going somewhere else? And I said, it's God. And they're like, we've heard that before, but that lasts usually a year. It doesn't last this long. And the answer is that I said to myself, if I go play cards and I win, then all that money is from the dark side. And everything that it does is going to go to them, and I'm going to go to them. So I don't want to win, but I also don't want to lose. So what am I doing? I'm not stupid. And that was it. It stopped. Because Baruch Hu handed me my keys back. He handed me my keys. I say no. Years after that, my friends went. People went. Come with us. No problem to say no. I don't need it. I don't want it. And it's a big yetzer because I davened. I davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I sat on that floor for those 2 hours, I davened because I owed money. I didn't daven because I want my keys back. If I wouldn't have owed money, I would have never asked to get the money back. I would have continued playing. So that davening didn't work. And 3 months later, I was playing again. Because I didn't daven to Hashem, I want to be a Rebbe, and help me. Help me, I'm in danger. I know I'm in danger. And I'll be talking, it's going to happen. I'm in danger. I'm going to lose my life. I'm going to lose my family. I'm going to lose everything that I want to do. I'm going to lose all my dreams. I wouldn't be standing here today. So that was the time I davened in shul Friday night. So because Baruch Hu said, here are your keys back. I am the master. I have the key to everything. But the time I prayed before was just because I owed money. It wasn't about, I wasn't praying. I was saying, just let me pay back. That's not tefillah. When I got scared and I knew where I had to go, I knew that I had to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that he saved me. It was a miracle that I opened that. If I wouldn't have opened that safer, I wouldn't be here today. Friday night, I opened the Kava Yasha 15 years ago. Never. From the day I opened that, and so people send me, I've spoken about this on camera before, it's not the first time, and afterwards the phone rings and I get emails, my son's a gambler, he's playing poker online, my cousin, my husband, I get 500 calls right after the share. You're the one, nobody ever stopped. Gamblers Anonymous is full of, I walked into Gamblers Anonymous once, right, and I walked out, was all those people lost everything. Nobody in Gamblers Anonymous are guys who won, otherwise they'd be playing in the casino. So everybody in Gamblers Anonymous, they're all sitting there, they lost everything. Right? So I walked in there at that time. I was winning. I'm like, I'm going to sit with these guys. Right? So it doesn't happen. So I could tell you, and the reason I'm telling you this is that I've been there. I lost my keys. And I told this to this girl who's texting on Shabbos. I said, I lost my keys. You lost your keys. I lost my keys. But the way I got them back is that I knew that I was in danger. It's not a lack of bitachon. And I went to the one that could get me out of danger. And he did. And I davened him, and he did. And everybody has that koyach. Hashem has the master key for all of you. You just need to go to him. And you need to ask him for it. And if you ask him for it, he'll give it to you. Shlach HaRabbah.